You're listening to Mucho Culture Radio, Community Voices.
When people come in from away, immigrants or diaspora or expats or whatever you want to say, they might be here for a time, they're adding something. They're a part as an individual. They're a part of something greater. They're adding something and bringing something, and the thing is changing, okay? Nova Scotia is not the same as it was 30, 40 years ago for a variety of reasons, so many reasons. One of the reasons is the individuals who've come and changed things, the individuals who are part of a larger collective who've come and changed things. Isn't that called development? I mean, that's the other thing, too. Yeah. There's another thing where it's like people talk sometimes, they're like, the developed world, the developing world. Oh, the developed world's all done. We're done. We got to figure it out. Hope you guys can catch up over there, the rest of you. And I mean, I think there needs to be an awareness, and that kind of radio you're talking about would do that, where you're enriching. It's an added value for everyone, and people are learning things, and this place is becoming more interesting and more dynamic because of it, for everyone, for somebody who's been here over two generations, and for someone who just came here. I think that's really important and needed, and I think it would be wanted. Yeah. I want it. I grew up in Dartmouth, and I went to the University of King's College. Of course, there's the journalism connection. And then I moved to Paris, and I was working with Radio France International. In my experience, France, for all of the pluses and minuses that every country has, it does a better job of covering African news than I have found in North America. Trump gets a lot of coverage. I get it, but never mind. So when I went to Radio France International, everybody speaks English. We're all here in Halifax, I assume. Yeah, because my French isn't as good. But I get by. And never mind the other languages I won't discuss. So, you know, when I started learning about, this was 2000 that I was working for Radio France International. And at the time, if you guys can remember, back in various countries in Africa, there were a lot of interesting political developments going on in various countries. In the Congo, to talk of that alone, this was around the time that Kabila Père, Laurent-Désiré Kabila, was assassinated. That brought in the whole crisis there, the renewed crisis there, and the presence of the UN, which had this mandate to accompany the country to peaceful elections. And I was interviewing all of these people from Paris, and that's how I started to learn about it. When the opportunity came, and I was back in Canada, that they needed UN information officers and people who had a radio background, I thought, fantastic. Like, please, choose me. Like, please, please. And they did. That was great. So I got there in 2004. And at that point, what was called MONUC, that was the name of the mission, it's now MONUSCO, it was about two years into this radio project called Radio Okapi, which is backed by the UN. But unlike some UN radios, it wasn't supposed to be just like, here's news about the UN and isn't the UN great. It was supposed to be a neutral platform that was informing and uniting the Congo after. And everybody always asks me, which I think is funny, but I get it. They're like, how long was the war? And I'm like, I don't know. It started on this day and ended on this day, like as if. But anyway, so whatever. I say 6 years. Just so after, say, 6 years of the second Congolese war, whatever, however you want to talk about it. So the radio had this job of uniting people. And at that time in the Congo, because it's such a big country, as you know, takes up like most of the central part, and the infrastructure was zero at that point. They used to say there were only 300 kilometers of paved roads throughout the whole country. I don't even think I saw even a fraction of that. Most of that probably was in Kinshasa. And so people didn't even know if, like, is my brother alive in Kibombo? Is my, what has happened over there with my father's family? All of this stuff. So along came the radio, and it had this wonderful purpose. Over time, the radio was built up, the UN and this NGO from Switzerland called Fondation Hirondelle. They beefed it up. That's when they brought expatriates in like me. At the time, because I was so naive. I thought I knew everything. What a joke. At the time, I sort of thought, oh, I'll be there to train people and to help train journalists who didn't have an education. That I understood wasn't the case, really. And in fact, most of the people I worked with had been journalists before, either with the RTNC or, and they were older than me, and they put me to shame with everything they knew. But I came to understand that the structure, in order to maintain its independence, needed people from the outside, because as you know, the pressure was so big for the government to try to use Radio Cappy as its mouthpiece and to everybody, they understood the reach it had. And so, of course, I mean, that's no different than here. I mean, government here is the same way. Like, you understand how many people are listening to CBC. You want to get your message out. So the role in the beginning of my role really was just something that's like keeping the journalists safe, really, just to be a bit of a buffer. Logistics, helping them get on UN flights to go cover things in the bush, which you couldn't walk to, which you needed the UN to transport you there. And basically, we had this wonderful time where the radio was new. People loved listening to it. They needed that information, and our listeners enjoyed it. I learned so much. I hope that the people I worked with were also learning things at the same time. And when I left, so after Kindu, this is the place. Radio Cappy is called Radio Cappy. And then Kindu, the place. Had anybody even heard of Kindu before? It's very small. Yeah? It's pretty small. It's the capital of Maniema. And actually, today it's not so small in terms of population. Maybe 250,000 people live there, which is not so different from Halifax. Yes. But at the time, it was so underdeveloped. That's not the case. I went back in 2013 to do research. The Chinese have come in. They've made roads. And Kabila, the president, has a lot of support in Kindu. So, of course, Kindu hasn't been hard done by with him as president. Okay. Well, it's funny because I was telling someone. Who was I telling? Sometimes I'll see somebody who I'm almost sure is Congolese. I don't speak Lingala, but I sort of get when I hear, and I'll be like, hey! And they'll be like, what? You're weirdo. And I'll be like, Sangonini! And they'll be like, what? I certainly feel, I've also spent 8 years in Hong Kong, so I'll do the same thing when I see somebody who looks like a Hong Kong Chinese person. I'll be like, hey, never mind. Ni hao. I speak some Chinese. And I guess a lot of Africans do too, by the way, because when I went back in 2013, there were so many Chinese people there. I saw people speaking Chinese. I was like, that's crazy. But how I feel. There's two things that I feel in relation first to the book and as a journalist and having this experience. The first thing is, so I wrote the book on this. One of the reasons I struggled is because after my time here, I would have liked, I have this sort of idea that the better book would have been one of the Congolese journalists writing it. Of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. But the issue is, of course, they're in their world. And they don't have access to the world I have, where I would like this to get out to the person down the street at the superstore who doesn't know anything from anything. I feel like I have an opportunity and even more the responsibility that I had to be an advocate or an educator for people who might not have seen the things that I did or understand some of the things I've come to understand, which is really not that much. Like, sometimes people interview me, they're like, oh, you're an expert on the Congo. I'm like, really not, no. But they're like, well, you've been. I'm like, no, that's not the same thing. But so I feel a real sense of responsibility for that. At the same time, they say, what would I do next? One of the things I'd like to do is I would like to be, and you see more of it now, one of the people who work with Africans in Africa or with the diaspora to get them to get their stories out. So an enabler. I think we need more of that. I think the time is rife or ripe, whatever the word is, for that. And there is some of that. Through this book, I've learned of certain organizations, a lot of them working in Kenya because it's the Anglophone and it's also a little bit European friendly, doing this kind of stuff. And I think that there's an appetite and a need for more of that. That's one thing. The second thing is, at a time because of Trump and the way things have gone generally, where journalists are coming, the media, as if it's just one thing, You're a journalist. You're the media. As if it's all the same. Fake the news. Media, fake news, exactly. And I just want to say, my husband said you should tweet at Real Trump and say, take a look at this. How do you like that for fake news? And I think that people can understand, can learn from this kind of story and see the importance that media plays in our lives, all of our lives. I don't care if you're in Mogadishu or if you're in Oklahoma. And the importance that the role that it has in society, the role it should have in society, and that we can have the courage to look at media in our own societies and say, is this as healthy as it needs to be? How can we fix it? That people can be educated on the difference between something that's copy and pasted on the internet or know where the source comes from. I say to people all the time, one thing I learned about Radio Cappy is an acronym, is I say it's the word tech. So the importance of training all the time. You could be a really good journalist, but that doesn't mean in any field. You're a doctor. You go on for further training. You get your skills owned up. That's one. Editorial line. It's very important to know what is the purpose of your organization and to stick to it. I mean, don't deviate from whatever the point is. And the point of this was always to give neutral, balanced, fact-based news. So sure, there's a place in the media for commentary and opinions, but that wasn't the point of this. It was just straight up. Also, the consequences of what you say. Because that's one of the things I learned very quickly. Because here, where there seemed to be so much media, it didn't seem to really matter if you got a detail wrong. It very much mattered if you got something wrong. Mm-hmm. There could be consequences on the misinformation. But also, people called into question where you stood on the whole thing. They didn't know, did you get it wrong on purpose? Was it an innocent mistake? Or were you trying to change the information in some way? And it spoke to the trust that people had in the media. And the final thing is humility. I mean, at the end of the day, the journalists were so humble. They understood that they were the carriers of information. They didn't own the information. It's not, I, journalist, have something to tell you. I'm going to teach you and inform you. It was very much that they were taking the news and the stories and the issues that existed within the communities and being the conduit for that. And they had a real sense of pride and humility in the whole thing that I think sometimes some people in the media elsewhere might forget. So that's what I learned. And I wish that other people could kind of learn some of that, because wherever you are, I think those are invaluable lessons to have.
You're listening to Mucho Culture Radio, Community Voices. Have a good time with Mucho Cultural Radio.